Blog Talk Radio.
For me to reach out and try to take our system to a new level.
Oh, okay, okay. What are some of the main concerns that you've received from parents while you were running, and have some of those concerns grown, or have you heard anything else since you were elected? Some of the major problems that's facing.
When parents approach me, there are a couple of common denominators. A lot had their own personal agendas. But, yes, there were some that were common denominators. One, parents wanted to have more services for students with dyslexia and wanted to know how can we provide better services to those students, recognizing their strengths as well as their weaknesses, and try to help them with their weaknesses and build upon their strengths. So that's something that we'll definitely look into. Also, parents wanted to have an opportunity to have more involvement. They wanted to be more a part of not just athletics, but also the academics. And I think that's something that we're going to look into. How can we get our parents involved and have a more of an active state and more of an ownership with our academics? So we're going to look at those areas. But if I can reminisce just a little bit, it was those two areas that were most common and presented themselves as the common denominator.
Oh, okay. Coming in, what are some of the weaknesses in every school system, and any organization has some weaknesses? What are some of the weaknesses that stood out to you, maybe not something that's going to bring the whole system down, but something that you feel like you need to put first on the agenda?
I think right now, if I had to have a priority, I would say that we want to look at our test scores. We're mediocre right now in our test scores, and I would like to look at those and see how we can better prepare our teachers as well as our students, so that we can actually show on paper what we're capable of doing. And I just believe that we are so much more than what our test results show at this point. So I want to look at ways on how we can improve those test scores. That's going to be big. If I had to say, communication would be my second next priority. We need to have more open dialogue with our faculty and staff members, and to embrace everyone. And I need to let all of our faculty and staff know and believe that every job has dignity, and I want to offer everyone that opportunity to voice their thoughts, their opinions, and their concerns in an unconditional manner. So those
yes,
are areas
an open door.
Absolutely. And what I mean by open door, traditionally we have said, you know, literally the door. But I want to open it so that communication is free-flowing. So if they want to text me, if they want to inbox me on Facebook or tweet me, what have you, I want them to know that we have a superintendent that's open to what I have to say, and she's given me dignity to my concerns, and I want to be able to do that.
Okay. Okay, we're also joined by my sometime co-host. I love having Darren Lyles on here because he's going to shoot it to you straight. Darren, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I want to go back to Dr. Satchel and the night you won, because obviously I've run before and it didn't turn out that way, but when you won, tell us about that. That's like winning the Super Bowl, wasn't it?
Well, it was huge for me. Darren, I had never in my life participated in politics before as far as a candidate, and I've always supported a certain candidate, and I've always voted, but I've never participated as far as a candidate. So that entire campaign was all new to me, new territory. However, the night that I won was spectacular. It was more than a dream. It was reality set in. It was just phenomenal. Outside of having my son, MJ, I don't know if I can put in the words that will accurately describe how I felt on that night. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Almost unbelief. I felt like I was the underdog in the race, and we came out on top, winning by 32%. And I'm not a political analysis, but I understand that that's
huge. A good margin.
Yeah, that's huge in the political world, and I totally accept that, and I appreciate the voters who trust me and want to say, hey, Gail, we're going to hand the gavel over to you, and we want you to do the very best for our students. So that's humbling, and I'm pretty excited about the opportunity.
Then you also made history.
No, I was just going to congratulate her on making history also as well.
Thank you very much. I did not know that I was making history or history was in the process of being made. I did not. As a matter of fact, Marcus, I found out I had made history the next day when I read the paper. And that was just, boy, having your cake and ice cream, too, to know that the public has decided that no matter what, we feel as though you're the best qualified candidate and you will give our kids the best choice, the best future for the next 4 years. And we're going to put all of that on your hands. That's huge. That's very humbling.
Yes.
To know that more than majority of the population in Colbert County is going to give me that opportunity to take our school to the next level.
Okay, Darren, I interrupted you. Sorry about that. You had something you wanted to say?
Yeah. I'm glad I asked this because I know it probably comes up to you. It's a hypothetical,
I'm cutting you off again. I know you're about to ask a question that I was going to ask, but go ahead. I'd rather it come from you.
All right. You got your husband, Melcher Satchel, a Cortland graduate, Lawrence County native. He's principal at Colbert County High School. What is the scenario if and I don't think he will, he's as good a person as I know. But what if Mr. Satchel messes up and does something wrong? How are you going to handle discipline an employee that's your husband?
I'm going to take his bottom to the bedroom, and we're going to take care of this. We're going to spank him. Well, in all seriousness, if Mr. Satchel were to cross the line and had to be dealt with in any type of manner, I would have to assign him a different supervisor because being his wife, he cannot directly report to me.
Right.
So that concern will be addressed by his new supervisor, and then they would take care of it, of course, following board policies and procedures.
Sure.
And that takes a load off of me being his wife. And it also takes a load off him because we do know as a couple that we are now under a microscope. And so people will be looking at us through thick lenses. So that would allow him to do his job without feeling as though he's been taunted by others. And then I can do my job without feeling that I had to handle my husband with kid gloves. His supervisor will be able to do that in an unbiased manner.
Oh, okay, now I want to ask this question. It's a question I thought it was a good question, Darren. It's a question I thought Darren was going to ask. What are you seeing from students from Lawrence County coming over to Colbert County? And what's your ideas on that?
We have seen a few that have transferred, and I'll just be transparent with you, Marcus. Our enrollment has been going down for the last 10 years. So whether they come from Lawrence County, Franklin County, Lauderdale County, or Africa, I'm all about welcoming those kids because we need to grow our student population. So as a superintendent, I'm excited to have them. I'm excited that they chose to choose our school system and our schools to educate them. And I'm going to embrace that, and I want to give them the best opportunity they feel that we can give them. So I don't have a problem with it, and that comes from a financial standpoint, and that you know and the more students that you have, the more funds you generate, and the more funds you generate means more opportunities you can offer those kids. So I'm all about welcoming those kids regardless of where they come from.
That's
great.
Dr. Satchel, how many students have you lost? I'm sorry. How many students have you lost?
No, I said go ahead, Darren.
Yes, sir. How many students have you lost in 10 years? I know Lawrence County has lost 1,000 in the last 7 years.
I don't know the exact number, but I know that it has been on a continuous down flow. This past year, we lost 90 of this past school year. That is the lowest that it has, that loss has been in the last 10 years. But we want to do something so that we can make that number turn around. And I think it has, because we now have a pre-K program in every elementary school. So that's going to help our enrollment, and hopefully it's going to sustain some of our students. So although we may have many, many students in kindergarten and first grade, actually in early childhood education classes, but they tend to drop out, transfer, or homeschool in the latter ages, like in high school. So we want to keep those kids in place. But as of right now, the only number that I can tell you with accuracy will be last year we lost 90 students. But I can say that we have lost continuously a decrease in enrollment for the last 10 years.
Sure.
And that hurts. And Mr. Lyles, you know that every time you lose a kid, you're also losing teacher units. So there's a direct correlation between your enrollment and the number of teachers that you have, or at least the number of teachers that you're paying with local funds.
Well, I know that Lawrence County has lost about 250 this year before the year's even ended, and I don't know how to turn it around, but I like your approach, because it is all about the kids, and they do need the teacher units. I think Lawrence County is average, it's $8,200 per student. The system gets funded. I don't know what it is in Carver County, because it's different federal programs and stuff, but I'm sure it's
low. Mm-hmm. Right, and you're exactly right. When you're looking at the numbers, and education is a business, and we would be remiss if we didn't recognize the business portion of education. And in that business, we have to know that every kid that walks through our door, there's a dollar amount that is attached to that kid. And so we want to keep those kids in there, because the more that we have, that means the more programs that we can offer. That means more opportunities that we can offer. And then they will become college and career ready when they graduate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, about, I know Governor Bentley, in 2015, he had announced some grants to give more children access to first-class voluntary pre-kindergarten. How does that fit in, County? Have you guys applied for those grants, or are y'all going to look at those grants closely and be competing for them?
Very good, and thank you for asking that question. And we have maximized that opportunity, Marcus. We have now have a pre-K program in every single elementary school, and that's five. And one of our elementary schools, that's Carver Heights Elementary, we have two pre-K programs there. And this year, we have applied for one additional site at Leighton Elementary. So we are looking to continue to maximize our opportunities to educate those four-year-olds. And again, when we're thinking about our student enrollment, we're hoping to capture these four-year-olds, capture their parents, their grandparents, convince them that the Carver County School District is the best school district in this area, and we want you to stay with us until you graduate. So we are taking care of those kids, we're educating them, and we're giving them the best that we have in our dreams that they will stay with us until they graduate. So to answer your question, we are thrilled that Governor Bentley has given money to early childhood education. We've taken that challenge seriously, and we have maximized every opportunity to do just that. And I'm hoping that we'll get one more program at Leighton Elementary. So today we have six programs. I'm hoping we'll have seven when fall starts.
That's great.
Yes, it's pretty awesome, especially for our four-year-olds.
Yes, it is. And the earliest you can get to them, the better.
Absolutely. And you know, people say that, oh, they're not ready, but they really are, Marcus. And it's not your traditional classroom. The Office of School Readiness, there's a different type of learning program that we have, a different type of learning style that we teach. And it's all about play, but yet they're learning about cooperation and their colors and their numbers. And they're having so much fun. But in the end, those kids are just like sponges. They soak up everything. So the kid that you get in August is not the same kid we send home in May. Totally different. but they are so empowered. And then they become so empowered, and they come home and talk to mom and dad and grandma, and they spent their day learning all day, not knowing that it was playtime. They got to dress up as doctors and nurses, and they have diversity centers, and they have the math centers, and they have the technology center. At the age of four, it just gives them opportunity to become our next taxpaying citizen and not a citizen that we're using tax dollars to support in our prisons.
I know that's right. The school-to-prison pipeline is real. But I totally agree with you when you say the earlier you start, the better, because, you know, it's a known fact. It's a kid will learn a new language at an earlier age. As you get older, it's harder and harder to learn a different language. And I want to ask you about what type of participation do you expect, and any words and your thoughts on the on PTA.
Okay. Each of our elementary schools have a PTA/PTO, and they're very active and they're very involved. I want them to continue to have that relationship with our faculty and staff. But, Marcus, I also want them to take ownership in our academics. Because our PTO parents, they tend to do the fun things, like fun day, the book show, things like that. And all of that we want to sustain. But also we want to bring parents in and say, look, these are our test scores. What can we do to help our parents at home? And research tells us that those involved parents, they're going to be at the school. They're going to be your PTO president. They're going to be your PTO moms and dads. It's those other parents who choose not to be as involved. We want to reach out to them. How can we do that? Well, maybe the PTO can have someone to open up the school technology center, you know, from 5 to 6, that they can come and do homework. Or we can teach those parents how to be involved technology-wise. Or we can have someone there from 4 to 5 to teach the parents how to help their kids. A lot of parents want and have that desire to help their kids. They don't know how. So maybe we can spend some time doing that so that PTO can maybe serve snacks and drinks, and we have a teacher to come in and to teach those parents. So that's why I want to have that relationship that's very active. We want everyone to be involved. There will not be any big I's and little U's. We're all together, and our common goal is that student. That's our focus.
Yes. How are y'all looking with after-school programs? How's it looking over there in Carver County? I haven't heard of too much here in Lawrence County. If they do have it, they don't talk about it much.
That's a fair question.
How do your after-school programs look?
That's a fair question, and as of right now, we do not have any after-school programs implemented. That is something that I've heard, too, on the campaign trail. The parents want it, particularly in elementary school. They're looking for an after-school program to help their kids, and so that is something that we are going to look into. As a matter of fact, we are in the process of writing a grant, the 21st Century Grant, and I know, Darren, you know about the 21st Century Grant. So
yes.
We're going to try to apply for that grant so that we can offer that opportunity for after-school programs. So, yes, that is something that is on the list. But as of today, we do not have any after-school programs for our kids.
Okay. Another thing that I'm certified with the North Alabama Food Bank, and sometimes they do, I know the Democratic Party of Lawrence County, they have backpack lunches for kids. Do y'all have any outside organizations that help the kids? You know, because North Alabama, I found out when I became certified that there is a very desperate need in North Alabama. Kids are not getting all the meals that they need from day to day. And I work here within Lawrence County, and I just want to know whether there are any churches or nonprofit organizations, because if they're willing to help, they can get food from the North Alabama Food Bank at 14 cents a pound, and We've helped many people out, and it would take months to help the kids out on the weekends and sometimes during the summer.
Right, right. Marcus, we did notice that our kids were still hungry on Monday mornings. They tend to get more than what they would do normally during the week. Or on Fridays, they would tend to eat more, or they wanted to take extras home. And so, of course, we did a little research and found out that some of our kids are hungry. Well, if you look at our demographics, more than 60% of our kids receive free or reduced lunches. So that's more than half of our kids are going home hungry because their last meal was on that Friday at school. God forbid it's summer, it's Christmas vacation, it's Thanksgiving week, it's spring break. So we had to come up with some partnerships. And we're very fortunate in the Carver County School District. We have churches in each of our schools, communities, that overwhelmingly help us with an unconditional hand. And we have Sunday school classes that sponsor certain schools, and they will bring snacks that little people can eat. When I say little people, I mean like your kindergartners, your first graders. They can open up different snacks with their hands. And so on each Friday, we have program where they actually bring in the food, and then the kids come by as they're getting on the bus or getting in the car. They can pick up a bag and take home with them, and it's enough food for them to sustain them until Monday morning. And then in the summertime, we have those programs set up. So and that's with the nonprofit in Florence. Well, they'll have certain places set up throughout the county that they'll give. But I will tell you this, that if it were not for our churches, our families would be in great danger. But our churches do this voluntarily. Their members donate the food. They work with our administrators to set it up for them. And it's almost like clockwork. You can see those women coming in, pulling those cars in, and unloading those bags of food for those kids. It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yes, I like to see that. I was just wondering if y'all had that same thing in place over there, because I think together, which has been my goal ever since I was doing spoken word poetry at Alabama A&M, we used to have what we call the Writer's Harvest every November, where artists would get up and say their piece, or we would auction off a book or something like that, and we would raise money for the North Alabama Food Bank, because if there is a crisis, and there's so much shame involved in it that parents, they kind of feel bad about letting other people know that there's not enough food in the house. So if we can, we got to offer it to kids and everything every week, and I would encourage everybody to do that. Okay,
Marcus,
my next
you
touched
on an excellent point that you made. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Well, no, go ahead. You're the guest.
Because our families who need the help, or our families who have been identified as homeless, they do not want the stigma that they are in that condition. And so they will go without more often before they will ask for help. So it's important and imperative for us to offer those services in a non-conditional manner so that anyone would feel okay in picking up those goods, receiving those services, and being able to get the things that they need and know that we're not going to go back and judge them. And when we create that environment, we're empowering those families and those kids so they don't have to worry about studying. They don't have to worry about eating or being hungry. They can simply have the concern of their educational progress and how I'm going to study for this test, how I'm going to get ready for this spelling test. I don't want our kids to have to worry about their next meal.
That's so true.
I need to worry about that. I need them to worry about their academics, not if they're going to eat or not.
Okay, I'm going to get Darren's take on Darren, I want to get your take on this with all the rescheduling of the schools. You know, some schools went up to 4A, some went down to 3A. How, first of all, I want to ask Darren what he thinks about that, and then I want to ask Ms. Satchel, were any changes made to Carver County status? Okay, Darren, what do you think about this rescheduling?
Well, I think they moved up classes, and so it's kind of deceiving. Although Lawrence County is I'm talking Lawrence County because Calvert and Lawrence are like brothers. So
right.
East Lawrence went up 28 students but went down a class. It's sort of a deceiving number. I know Calvert County has got a real real good football tradition. They got a real good girls basketball team. They got a good boys team. Talking about Calvert County High School, and they got a Lawrence County native at Cherokee doing a great job with the football team, Linus McDonald. I don't know how it shifted in Calvert County, but go ahead, Dustin.
Okay. Well, I will tell you this, what I'm excited about, Madison Academy, they moved up. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
We do not have to play them, and we have a viable chance of winning in all categories, in all sports. So we're definitely excited about that. The only change that I'm aware of today was Cherokee, and they went to a 2A program. All the others stayed the same. And then, of course, like I said, we were thrilled to know that Madison Academy had moved up.
Sure. Can I ask this question, Dr. Satchel?
Yes,
once again, because Calvert and Lawrence are so close, I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but since you broke the female glass, you broke the African-American glass ceiling, but Lawrence County is still under a court order for being non-unitary. In other words, I'm talking about employees. They don't have enough diversity. The teachers and the administrators don't look like the general public, give or take 15%, I think the Singleton standard says. Where is Calvert County's status right now, and what are some of the things you're going to do to hire more minorities, because I know we let two good ones get out of Lawrence County, Linus McDonald and your husband. How are we going to hire to make it look like the general population?
Okay. I will say one thing before I answer the question. You allow three to leave. It was myself, Linus, and then Mr. Satchel.
Sure.
You forgot about me.
I did, Gail. I'm just trying to get a conversation started, but I apologize. Okay.
Well, I will tell you this, and we're being transparent here, that our faculty and staff does not reflect the population that we serve. So that is something definitely that we will look into. We're, of course, going to go with the most qualified person, but we're going to put forth a true effort in recruiting faculty and staff of color. And that means that we need to go to Alabama A&M, we need to go to Alabama State. We need to actively recruit from these universities. Meharry, we need to recruit from Tennessee State. We need to go to Tuskegee and set up booths. That has not been done for the Calvert County School District. Now, have we set up booths in other areas? We have, to UNA. We go to Athens. We go to UAH. But we need to make a concentrated effort to recruit faculty and staff of color. Now, you heard me say staff several times because I think it's imperative that when students see the janitor walk through the building, sometimes that janitor needs to look like them. Or when they're being served lunch, sometimes the lunch lady needs to look just like them. Give you an example, bring it home for myself. When I would go through the lunch line at McAdory High School, there was a lunch lady that looked like me. And every day she would call me her little butterfly. It wasn't the counselor. It wasn't the teacher. It was that lunchroom lady who gave me encouragement every day by calling me her little butterfly. So imagine all the opportunities we are missing because the kids do not have people that look like them. Now, will all that encouragement come from that? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. However, we need to make that so that those kids know that when they go off to college, they might just have a black English teacher. When they go off to college, they might just have a landlord who's Hispanic. So, again, we have not done the very best that we could do. That is going to be a focus of ours. And I hope with the applications that we come in, the staff that is presented for interviews, have our faculty and staff to match the diversity of the students that we serve.
That sounds very good. Okay, we're going to take about a two-minute break, and then when I come back on the other side of the break, I want to ask you about the conditions, the physical conditions of the schools, and you can mention the ones you want to, but I just want to know about the physical conditions of the schools, because I toured a school, and I'm not going to mention it, the school, but it was in horrible shape. So when we come back on the other side of this break, I want to ask you about the physical condition of the schools in Carbon County.
Yes.
Back in 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Okay.
Love and happiness.
Albert?
Yeah.
Hey, Dan.
Something that can make you do wrong.
What's up, Gail?
Make you do right. Yeah. Love.
Are we off camera?
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, talking about how she can make it right. Yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Denise, Story Satchel. And we talked earlier before the show, and we both learned we both attended Jacksonville State University. I really loved it down there. And there was actually a guy from Leeton. His name was Quentin Davis. He was an alpha. And he gave me my first he gave me my first job in college. And if we were installing sprinkler systems, and I really appreciated that he did that. And
Quinn was my big brother.
Is he?
Yes, he was my big brother, and we bonded. As a matter of fact, we went back to homecoming a couple of years ago and had a chance to meet with Quentin. As a matter of fact, you know, when you're in college, you don't normally – well, you find out where people are from, but you really don't know. And I told him that I was living in Sheffield, and he was like, hey, I'm from Leeton. We have land, and I think his mom and a lot of his relatives are still here. So it ended up being a small world. But, yes, I know Quentin Davis.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Oh, yeah, he gave me a job, had me out there working. And we just hit it off when we first met. When I was younger, they was a few years older than me. I went down there in 90 and 91, and I was used to hearing music like that, Al Green and stuff like that, and I said, these are the only guys that listen to the same music my mom His family listened to the rest of the younger people was listening to all the other kind of modern music of today, and I was like, I'm gonna start hanging with these guys. And we used to go over. I used to walk from the dormitory over there to his house just to hang out with him and all the alphas. But that was really fun. He's a nice guy. Yeah, he's a nice guy. And he just opened up his home to us. You know, we'd come over there and hang out. We probably would do some things, you know, as college. Some things we probably didn't need to. But we loved getting off the campus and walking over to Quinn's house. And we probably bugged him and got on his nerves. As soon as he get off from work, we walking through the door and stuff like that. And then he said, why don't you just come to work?
Right.
Yeah, he was like, why don't you just come to work for me? You're over here all the time anyway. And we started working.
Yes. Was he doing the lawn business then?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
He had a lot of top-notch. Yeah, he's still doing that?
I think so.
He had a lot of top-notch clients, too, in the Jacksonville area.
Yes.
He definitely had a good name. He definitely had a good name. Was doing good work. I mean, we were doing everything.
Quentin is a game changer.
Taking the line, putting outside. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, before the break. Yes, he's a very good guy. Before the break, I was going to ask you, what are the schools, what conditions are the physical conditions that the schools are in, and is there any places that you see that you're going to try to push for some changes or improvement?
At this point, we are in a good position with our physical buildings as well as our physical sites. There are a couple of places that we'll need to put on some roofs. The one that I know for sure will be Luton Elementary. We'll need to go ahead and replace a roof there. And it's not that the roof is falling in. It's just time. It's that age that we know that it needs to be done. I will say this with our maintenance department, they're very proactive and trying to get keep our facilities up to a par so that our kids can come to school and learn and our teachers can come to school to actually teach. So as of right now, are there any major things that we have to do? No, sir, there aren't. But every day we're evaluating our buildings to make sure they're up to par, making sure that our heating and air is working properly, making sure that our refrigerators and our cafeterias, that they're working, our ovens are working, things like that. So as of right now, there aren't any major, when I say major, when you're looking at $2 or $3 million, no, sir, none of that. But are we looking at how we can save and be more energy efficient? Yes, sir, that's always a possibility, and that's something that will be on the agenda to look at.
Okay, Darren. Darren, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, make sure you convince her. Don't hire the same energy efficient guy they had hired over here. Get a lot of money going down the drain.
Yes, but
also today is the 5-year anniversary of those terrible storms. What things do you have in place at Carbon County when we're faced with any type of bad weather, but especially tornadoes at this time of year?
Well, we're working very closely with the EMA office in Colbert County, Mike Milton and Michael Smith. We're working with them. As a matter of fact, in our communities, they have built some shelters, storm shelters for us. Then we have designated those specific places for our kids and the faculty and staff. We've also made the choice to buy each of our schools a pretty significant first aid kit for each of our buildings that we have. We also most recently have purchased survival kits to put into each of the schools. So we're taking those efforts to be ready. We know that we can't avoid them, but we need to be ready, and that's what we're getting ready for. And we're trying to be as safety aware as much as possible. When the alarms go off, our kids know what's going on. Our principals know, and they're going to take appropriate action in the most efficient manner. And then we have things in place to help them. All of our schools have their disaster plans, and they're ready. They know what they're about, what they need to do, and we have those resources. We have partnered with our local communities, such as our hospitals, the sheriff's department, the police department in each of the cities, the local Dollar General, the local Walmart, places like that. So if there were something to happen, that we have contact to address our needs when that need occurs. So we're there.
Okay.
We're getting better. But again, we're learning from places like Phil Campbell. We're learning from places like Tuscaloosa. So if that, when it occurs, it's not the matter of if, but when it occurs in our area, we're going to be as ready as possible, and we're going to save as many lives as possible and prevent as many injuries as possible by being proactive and not reactive.
Okay. And let me ask these two things, because they've been in the news lately for Alabama. They've been talking about lice spreading in schools, and what about this Zika virus? You want to come in on either one of those?
We do have school nurses in each of our schools, and so if a kid presents him or herself to the nurse with something in their head, they will do a head check. Then they'll also do the entire class. So we do have procedures in place for head lice. Of course, we send the kid home with a note to the parent. We teach the parent how to help the kid get rid of the lice by telling them that they need to wash all their clothing and things like that. So we do have a head lice policy in place, but our school nurses are our big educators, our forerunners, in keeping that to a very minimum. With this Zika virus, we do have a couple of places in the county. When it rains a lot, you may have some city water. So our maintenance department is getting pairing up with the county department, especially our county engineer, Mr. Bedford, and we're trying to drain those places or put in things to help those areas drain better. We don't want that water to sit. I know in one area there's a lot of water that's sitting, and our football team practice over there for spring practice. So our maintenance department has made that a priority in trying to get that water out of there and keep it moving. And one of our schools, our Little League and our softball field is actually built on a swamp. So we're trying to, again, get that water, keep it moving so that it moves out into the creek. And for some reason, over the years, the landmass has changed, and now it's sitting. So we're trying to keep that moving. So, yeah, we do have a partnership with the county. Like I said, the county engineer, Mr. Bedford, and we're trying to go ahead and be, again, proactive and not reactive in getting all that sitting water out of the way. At that point, the Zika virus doesn't have a place to hang out. So we're minimizing their opportunities, if you will, to sit on our students and to be around our student population.
Yes. And my next question is, I know people can go on the Carbon County School System website, and they can see jobs available, but are there any jobs that first come to mind that people should be applying for?
There's not a job that's available as of today. However, in the month of May, a lot of people decide if they're going to move, if they're going to transfer, if they're going to retire. And at that time, you'll see a lot of jobs posted. And that's just not common with Colbert County. That's pretty much an education across the board. May is the month where people make great life-changing decisions. So I would imagine in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will have several positions available for different reasons, from transfers to moms having babies and they're not going to come back, to parents becoming grandparents for the very first time and now they want to retire. For some, it's just time to retire and they're going to retire. But there's nothing posted today. But I would imagine in the next 2 weeks, and if history continues, we'll have several job postings available.
Okay. Yeah, so everybody keep in mind to keep checking the website in case something is posted.
Please
Darren,
check the website. It's Please check the website.
No, go ahead.
It's It's www.colbert.k12.al.us, and if you go to employment, it will give you two categories. One is classified and one is classified will be your teaching positions or your administrative positions. Unclassified will be your child nutrition staff, your janitors, your bus drivers, your mechanics, your nurses, and those areas. But, yes, please check with us, particularly in May. Again, people make those life-changing decisions during that month when it comes to education.
Okay, Darren, you got anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm going to leave on this right here. That's such a – we then you had a conversation or two when you started decided to run and gave advice back and forth. Obviously, it takes more votes to win. That's a you thank the voters, but is anybody in your team that was around you when you ran, you know, people give you money. It takes a lot of money to run for office. Anybody that helps you out, that you'd like to thank right now, you know, any just free game right now if you want to thank anybody.
You know what, Darren, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I know this is a cliche, but I have to say thank you to my husband, Melcha, and thank you to our son, MJ, because even though my name was on the ballot, those two human beings put in much time into that race as I did, if not more, because I was on the stage, but they were the ones who were actually having to talk with the people, work the crowds, and doing those things while I was in the spotlight. And people don't see that. They just see the candidate up front. But they didn't see the nights that my husband took phone calls or the days that people walk up to my son and ask about his mother, even though he was only 14 at the time. So if I had to say any two people that stood out, I would have to say it was my husband and my son. And I'll summarize by saying this. There are people like you, Darren. There are people that believed in me no matter what was going on Facebook, no matter all the trash that was going on. People still believed in Gail Satchel, and I am humbled by that. And not only did they believe in me, but they also prayed for me, prayed for my family, and that is huge. You cannot put that into a political plan. You cannot put that into political terms. I can only say thank you. My grandmother used to have a saying, if she had 10,000 tongues, she couldn't thank God enough. And I'll end by saying this. To all of those people who believed in me, whether you're from Lawrence County, Carver County, Jefferson County, or Timbuktu, if I had 10,000 tongues, it would not be enough to thank all those people who believed in me and prayed for me. And, Marcus, I thank you for this opportunity to talk about the Carver County School District.
I was glad to have you on, and you're welcome back anytime. And just remember, like you said, everything that was going on and all the trash talking, if you think they hate you while you were running, you're going to really see the haters now that you've won. So just keep your head up, stay prayed up, and I wish you all
Amen.
The best luck. And
thank you,
Darren,
so much
for setting up this great interview. It was really great.
She's doing good. She's doing good.
Okay. And I look forward to coming back and keeping you posted on what we're doing to help the system grow.
Anytime you want to get the word out or have anything concerning with Carver County Schools, you get in touch with Darren, and you guys can go along with it. And then me and Darren will help get the word out on whatever it is you're trying to do. Okay, and with that, we'll wrap it up, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, have a great day.
Thanks,
Dan.
Good deal, Mark.